Hello and welcome to the latest edition of China Inc. by Bamboo Works, where we discuss the latest business and financial news from China and what it all means. I'm Doug Young, Bamboo Works Editor-in-Chief, and I'm joined today by Renee Vangasten, one of our founding partners, who's also a longtime China watcher and former investment banker. Today, we'll look at new relief for foreign businesses on cross-border data transfers. We'll also look at a massive dividend from China's leading fintech lender and the chilly reception it got from investors. We'll start with data, which has become a sensitive topic for both domestic and foreign businesses in China these days. Foreigners, especially smaller businesses, worry that vague new rules on cross-border data transfers could put them at risk of non-compliance or even acting illegally if China later determines such transfers are illegal. But now the internet regulators come out with new clarifying guidelines that show the big majority of foreign businesses are exempt from reporting their cross-border data transfer activity. So, Renee, why don't we begin by explaining why this is such a big issue and why this new determination is such a big deal also?
Well, you know, you have to think about how companies manage themselves around the world and how information flows between the various business entities in different countries. So obviously, this depends a bit on the type of company, the type of business that they're in, and the size of the company. But if you're, say, a U.S. company headquartered in the U.S., you have operating subsidiaries in China and other countries, you obviously, first of all, you need information on the performance of those businesses, quite obviously. But also, every company operating anywhere on Earth needs to have information about a range of issues that have nothing to do with its operating and financial performance. It needs to understand the local political environment. It needs to understand the local economy. More importantly, it needs to, have a sense for where the local economy is headed going forward in terms of determining production volumes, for instance, investment opportunities, and all of that. Mm-hmm. So the thing that I look at here is, okay, so companies are going to be supposedly now free to move that information from China to their headquarters, let's say in the U.S., in Europe, wherever, in Germany, in France, right? Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we all know that the Chinese government has, over the past 2 years, 3 years, become extremely sensitive about what kind of information people in general, not just foreigners, have access to that may not, paint a very rosy picture of what is going on in the economy, where it's headed, and all of that. So I'm not too sure how we reconcile those two things here, number one. Number two, in China, what is good today is not necessarily good tomorrow. What is allowed today or tolerated is not necessarily allowed and tolerated tomorrow. And sometimes, somebody decides tomorrow that it's not okay, but with a retroactive effect to a year ago. So unless all of that changes, I don't see how companies that have been operating in China for quite a while, especially over the last 3 to 5 years, and have seen the evolution of rules and so on, how these companies can be completely at ease that it's just going to be okay going forward, no matter what. Mm-hmm. So that's my two cents about this, data transfer.
Right. This new clarification, I guess it's clear for today, but who knows what it'll be tomorrow. Well, how about, I mean, I was thinking this new decision, you know, it does come, at least some people are saying it comes as a relief to foreign businesses in China, but it really only addresses a small part of what's making, you know, these foreign companies reluctant to invest in China these days. You know, there are lots of other issues. Market access has always been a bigger concern. Arbitrary enforcement of rules is another. And most recently, there's the slowing Chinese economy. Even if, you know, if they really do stick by this, you know, data exemption that really, you know, exempts most foreign companies from worrying about this, do you think that's even going to make a big difference in changing foreign attitudes about investing in China these days?
Well, I think there's another dimension to this, which is geopolitical, and the needs that companies have and governments have, not just companies, to diversify supply chain.
Hmm.
So, if you're a business that has, if you're a company with a business and they've never been operating, manufacturing, or offering services in China at all, and you look at the size of the market, you figure out the opportunities and so on, and you decide that that's something that you should do, then yeah, maybe it kind of makes sense. If you're a company that has been operating in China for quite a while, with a substantial, part of your global operations, manufacturing, supply chain, and so on in China, you probably today position where you want to invest less there going forward, unless you're fortunate enough to be in a business with products that are unavoidable, and where you believe that there's still a huge potential demand for your products, for what you do. So then maybe. But, you know, you look, for instance, at Apple. Apple, as we all know, historically has had pretty much the entirety of its production of gadgets, iPhone, iPad, everything else, AirPods, in China. Once COVID started to hit, they started to focus on diversifying away. It is reported that last year they produced 7% of their iPhones in India. This year they expect to produce, the number that I've seen is 14-15%. Mm-hmm. Their sales in China are down. The most recent figure suggests that their shipments in the country were down 33%. They have growing competition from local national manufacturers, including Huawei. So, you know, if you're in that kind of situation, I don't think it makes a lot of sense to invest further in, producing your devices in China. So I would say, in conclusion, it really depends on the kind of business. It depends on the size of the company. It depends on whether the company has been there already or not, and if not, thinks that there's a good shot at, growing sales in the environment in China, in spite of the slowing economy. So that's going to be very much, in my view, a company by company decision.
Okay. Well, at least they won't have to worry about data for now, or at least the smaller ones. Hi. Next, we're going to move on to take a look at a company called Lufax, which is one of China's leading fintech lenders. The company surprised investors last month by announcing a massive special dividend of $2.42 per American depositary share, which was more than 70% of its stock price at the time. Needless to say, the stock shot up after the announcement, but not by nearly as much as the size of the dividend, rising by just $1.11 over the next two trading days. So I'm not a financial genius, but even I can see that if we assume the stock will fall back to its earlier levels after the dividend's paid, that anyone who buys the stock just to get the dividend could earn a nice profit with very little effort. Rene, you're a veteran of this stuff. Am I missing something here? Or if not, can you explain why investors are so wary of this company and its dividend plan?
Well, I think that investors are wary of the company pretty much because of its performance, its evolving business model. But, you know, before we go into that, there's one thing that has been repeated again and again in the market, and in particular with respect to Chinese companies when stocks do not perform well. Investor clamor for share buybacks, payment of dividends, and so on, if the company has a lot of cash. That is not necessarily a sign of confidence in the future of the business.
No.
It's a sign that investors who have losses on paper basically want to somewhat correct that. And there are two ways to do that. One is to ask the company to pay a dividend as big as possible, return the cash concept if you can't put it at work productively in your business. Give me my cash back. I'm a shareholder. This cash belongs to me. That's kind of the concept. So uh-huh. I get $2 back. If I have had a loss over time, maybe just on paper, that is, I don't know, $3, $4, $5, then, you know, it's good to get $2 back, right? The same concept applies to share buybacks. The expectation being that as the company mops up shares in the market, there are fewer shares available, and therefore, on one hand, it increases earnings per share, which is good as long as there are earnings, which is not always the case and not the case here. But there's this feeling that at least, you know, the company is returning cash or value to shareholders. So if you do a massive enough share buyback, the stock will go up quite inevitably, at least for a short period of time. So if I have zero confidence in the future, I may decide to sell, cut my losses, and go on with life. None of that is an indication of the fact that the fortunes of the company are going to be much better in the future.
Right.
So that's one thing. The second thing, in the case of Lufax in particular, after that, what we saw was a large number of analysts actually cut their forecast for 2024. So that's obviously not supportive of the stock price. The company's business model has evolved over time, but it continues to struggle to find a what I would call the healthier footing. It just looks like it's going to take quite a while to ride the ship, if they can ever do that. They're part of the Ping An ecosystem.
Right.
I think that in the early days, it served them well when they were a P2P company, because that's pretty much how they started life. They were a P2P company, and they were going pretty much after, you know, individual borrowers and so on, at kind of like on a short-term level, smaller loans and so on, which was different from what Ping An Bank, the bank in the Ping An ecosystem, was doing. But then we all know what happened to the P2P industry, and the regulators forced most of them out of business and forced the other ones to, you know, change their business model. The slowing economy is not helping. Lufax tried to go into wealth management, but they don't have a license. Mm. And it looks like very difficult in China to obtain a wealth management license these days. So that's not working. The economy is slowing down. Bad loans, or at least delinquency rates have gone up. company has pretty much decided to scale down the business. If you look at the results that they announced recently, revenues were substantially down from 2022 in the year 2023, but scaling down has actually not helped at all in terms of losses. So it's kind of difficult to see, you know, how it could turn very positive very quickly. And I think that's what the market is reflecting.
Okay. Yeah, because that was going to be my next question is, this company is really shrinking. I mean, if you look at the other China fintech lenders, some of them are growing a little bit. Now, nobody's growing a ton, and some of them are shrinking a little. But I mean, Lufax, really, they cut their loan portfolio by about 50% last year, and they said they're going to cut it another 30% this year. I mean, these are really big cuts.
Right.
Are they particularly, you know, exposed? Why are they cutting so drastically? And I guess you're saying investors obviously probably don't like to see this kind of drastic cuts.
I think that they, you know, like a lot of those P2P converted into different business models, it certainly is P2P. They, you know, the big ones grew very quickly, very big. And most of them, pretty much all of them, have had to go through a period of, you know, shrinking the business, shrinking the risk. I don't know, you know, at what time Lufax decided to take its own loss weight pills, but you know, a lot of the P2P companies, even you know, among the biggest ones, that may be even surviving a little bit today, but on a totally different model, like Chudian and so on, have you know, are much, much smaller today than they used to be. The two that come to mind that have survived pretty well are Finvolution and Chifu.
Chifu, right.
Which is the old 360 finance. Aside from that, it's been a tough ride for just about everybody else.
Yeah, no, true. I mean, Lufax seemed to be doing okay, but not so much anymore. All right, well, we'll have to leave it at that. Thanks everybody for joining us this week. In our next program, we'll look at the latest developments in the West as it contends with a flood of China electric vehicle exports. We'll also look at the latest wrinkle in the unraveling of e-commerce giant Alibaba's plan to break itself up. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and rate us and share us on your favorite podcast app. Meantime, hope to see you next week. Goodbye for now.
Goodbye. Thank you all.